Welcome to Chasing Patience, a podcast about navigating through our infertility by speaking out, helping others, and understanding the journey.
Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Chasing Patience
podcast.
Yep. I am Shane.
And I'm Nico. This is a little too happy for subject of today.
Yeah. So if you heard our previous episode, episode 3, we did preview that for this episode, we were going to talk about the microtassy and the testicular biopsy and any other E you can think of.
Basically, how to prepare for having surgery on your testicles.
Yeah. So men, buckle up.
Okay, you're too enthusiastic about this. So we wanted to do this episode because, like, when I was researching for his first biopsy, I couldn't find really any information on how to prepare.
Yeah.
At all. And then they do give you like a preparation sheet before you go into surgery, like maybe a week or two before, but it's so vague. Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of get into that in more detail, but maybe you should just explain first why you would need a biopsy.
Well, let me start over. The reason that you would need a testicular biopsy is it's basically just for them to extract sperm from you or fluid basically, but you know, and hopefully there's sperm in there is basically what it is. So with the testicular biopsy, it's basically, you know, they go into one of the testicles and they kind of just randomly select areas and they'll extract fluid from there and hopefully there's sperm in there. And yeah, then they, you know, examine and all that stuff and then, you know, kind of go on from there. With the microtassy, it's more intrusive and it's more detailed, I guess you could say, in terms of they're actually looking for areas that, like, basically it's under a microscope and they're looking for areas that the doctor is, when they're looking at it, they'll say, okay, this area here looks like it has kind of like, you know, where sperm is going to be at, basically.
Yeah, there's tubulars within the testicles, and sometimes if they are fatter, then it can indicate that there's sperm cells there.
Right.
So when they're doing a microtassy, they can tell under the microscope which areas are more likely to have sperm. So they'll go extract from those areas. And another difference between a biopsy, like a regular testicular biopsy, and a microtassy is that with a biopsy, since they are going in through a smaller hole, because they will cut a small hole in one of your testicles, mm-hmm. and then extract the sample from there, there is some risk associated with it, with, you know, hitting blood vessels or damaging cells inside there. So although the biopsy usually is the first step, some people will go straight to a microtassy if mm-hmm. they don't think that they'll get anything from it. Right. And some of those things can be indicated through blood tests. Like, for example, if you have a Y chromosome deletion, then you're going to go straight to a microtassy because there's not really a chance of you having a lot of sperm. But sometimes when it's kind of unexplained, then they do need to do a biopsy so they can kind of see why you have no sperm in your ejaculate. So going along those lines, I also wanted to mention, the contrast with a microtassy, since you are under the microscope there, it's less, even though it is more invasive because they're cutting a bigger hole mm-hmm. and they are cutting it down the middle of your testicle. Like, it's down the middle between your two testicles, so they can go into both. Yeah, so even though it's more invasive, since it's under a microscope, they're able to see all the areas and go around it so that they won't damage any of the tissue. So it's kind of, I guess I would say it's slightly safer than a biopsy. Like, people can go through multiple microtesses and be okay, but if you go through multiple biopsies, you have a chance of ruining your hormones.
Well, wasn't the thing with the microtesses, like, if you keep doing it, mm-hmm. then you can, kind of lose testosterone or stuff like that. Yeah,
you can damage your testosterone production, because if you damage the cells in your testicles, then it can throw off your hormones. And we were talking to our reproductive specialist about this, and the urologist, and they were talking about, like, they know people who went through multiple biopsies, like up to 5 biopsies, which in my opinion is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And then they ended up having to go on testosterone replacement because their testicles can't produce it anymore,
right.
Which is really sad, especially since they didn't end up finding any sperm anyway. So.
Yeah. So I guess another thing kind of going into it is, and this is from my experience and just how I kind of went into it. I kind of just went into it with low expectations. And so I would think it would be kind of helpful, I guess, in a way to say it. I guess that's the right way to say it or something, but kind of just helpful to be like, okay, expect pretty much all possibilities that it's not either, you know, it's going to be a success and this is the only time I'm going to be able to, you know, I'm going to do it. And this is great. I don't have to do it anymore. Awesome. You know, or there's going to be failure and, you know, then you have to think about the next steps. So you kind of have to understand that there's going to be all different types of possibilities that can happen. I like for my experience, when they did the biopsy on me, they found 7, lucky number 7 sperm. That's how much they found for me. So, you know, but for some people, they'll find thousands, or, hey, we found millions, actually. Yeah, millions. We found a ton. This is great. You know, so which is awesome. And I'm sure there's people out there that when they went through a testicular biopsy for the first time, it was a success and that's it. I don't do it anymore. But just, you know, for me, they only found 7, you know, which is better than 0, but still it's like, it's basically nothing, but at the same time, it's better than 0, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with why you have azoospermia. So if you have obstructive azoospermia, meaning you don't have the right plumbing to get the sperm out of your testicles and into your ejaculate, then you probably won't have a problem getting sperm from your testicles, because it's not a production issue. You're producing sperm, you just can't get them out of there.
Right.
So in that case, if you have if you have obstructive azoospermia, then you have a higher chance of success. If you have non-obstructive azoospermia, meaning that you have a production or hormone issue, then you should be lowering your expectations. Especially if you're diagnosed with Sertoli-only cell syndrome, because we were looking at some data about this, and there's only a 13% chance of extracting sperm from a biopsy or a microtesty. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy that you had 7 even with that, because the chances are so low.
Yeah.
13%. A lot of people would, I mean, there are a lot of people who see those numbers and they're like, well, why would I want to cut myself up in the most vulnerable place if I only have a 13% chance?
Well, 13% chance is better than 0.
That's true.
You know, so people just, when they hear those odds, even though it's not great, it's better than nothing. They're willing to go into it. I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people are willing to go into it. So,
yeah.
So do you want to kind of go into just, you know, how to prepare for it and, you know, I guess, yeah, some things that you need to do in order to kind of prepare yourself for it, you know?
Yes. So before the surgery, you need to make sure that you are completely prepared for anything that may happen, because in our case, some of the worst possible things happened other than the wound reopening.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the basic stuff that you're going to need is a lot of gauze, And I'm talking like maybe 3 boxes of rolled gauze and maybe at least 2 boxes of non-stick pads that are, it's basically like a type of gauze where it doesn't stick to the wound, which you're going to need because you need to put that on top of the wound on top of the other gauze.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the things that, that you're going to realize too is when, and I know I'm kind of jumping ahead, but it kind of ties with the gauze, whatever, is that they're basically going to have you wear a jock strap for an amount of time after the surgery. And so the gauze is really helpful to kind of keep things elevated and to also, you know, also catch the bleeding, that's especially the first couple of days, because it'll stop bleeding eventually, but the first couple of days for sure is going to continue bleeding a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the gauze is really that to basically stop, you know, the bleeding from going all over the place. But you don't have to really worry about that too much, because at least from my experience, it wasn't bleeding too much. It was there, but it wasn't like, oh my god, what's gonna happen, where it was small amounts.
Yeah,
but
if you have more than if you're soaking through gauze pads in an hour, then you need to go back to the hospital.
Yeah, that's something, the doctor, where you're not recovering right, or something just didn't go right.
Yeah. But as far as gauze goes, like he said, you'll be wearing a jock strap, and when you come out of surgery, there'll be a whole bunch of gauze underneath inside the jock strap, kind of holding your testicles up. Mm-hmm. And then, you'll want to put a gauze pad on top of the actual wound so that it doesn't stick to the gauze, because when it dries and then you have to rip that off, then it will reopen and then bleed again.
Yeah, it's the non-stick, right? Is that what you said?
Okay. Another thing that you will need to have is lots and lots of Pedialyte. And I'm thinking maybe about 10 bottles of it.
Yeah, Pedialyte, or what was that, Liquid IV?
Too? Yeah, actually, another, like Liquid IV, which is kind of like a new company that's kind of come out during, especially during the pandemic. I mean, it was around before then, but during the pandemic, it really became a thing because they started selling at Costco, mm-hmm. and they started donating their product to people with COVID, because basically what Liquid IV is a super hydration type of drink where you mix it into your water, and it's unlike any other like hydration drink that I've ever had. It tastes a little bit salty, but it's not anything like Gatorade or Pedialyte, though. I don't know how to explain it. And it's not like any of those electrolyte tablets that I have for like after workout or something.
Right.
But so get something that will replenish your hydration, because you will be dehydrated mm-hmm. after surgery, and your recovery really depends on how hydrated you are.
Yeah. It'll definitely help.
And then along those lines with hydration, you're going to need a handheld urinal.
Yeah.
Which you can get at CVS or Walgreens or probably even Walmart, because, well, you're going to be peeing a lot because you're going to try to be keeping hydrated, but you don't want to stand up because, well,
yeah, like we kind of,
maybe we should tell that story because we haven't told that story yet.
Okay. Yeah. Cause, and I know we've hinted at this, I'm sure I've tried to hint at it a lot. Like, I'm going to preview this story. I'm going to talk about it, whatever. So yeah, here it is. Just get ready. Right.
This is like the most terrible thing that can happen, and that's why we're trying to prevent it for you.
Right.
Get a urinal so that you don't have to stand up to pee for the first couple of days.
Yeah. So the first day, the first couple of days after, you know, like she was saying, basically kind of lifting me up and walking me slowly into the bathroom, because walking is not fun with a jock strap on. It's not fun. I mean, because at least for me, I don't know about anyone else, but for me, I'm just wearing a jock strap. You know, I don't want to try and put on shorts or pants on because it's just extra clothing and more tightness there or whatever. And I want it to be as comfortable as possible, and you know, less clothing is basically what I'm trying to say. So I was just wearing the jock strap. So I don't know anybody else, but that's just me. Anyway. The first couple of days she was just walking me to the bathroom. And
actually, it was only the first day.
Was it only the first day?
Yeah. He was fine the first day because I was walking him to the bathroom. Second day we get up, we go to walk to the bathroom, and then here, you can tell your point.
Yeah, okay.
Of view.
So So basically, yeah, you know, it was just like any other time. She was helping with the bathroom and all that, and I was going pee. And it's weird because I remember feeling kind of lightheaded still, especially with kind of being, you know, anesthesia and all that stuff. I was feeling lightheaded, but it was a little more than usual this time. And the last thing I remember was kind of like my vision was getting a little blurry and fuzzy. And then I guess the next thing I knew, I fainted and hit my head on the wall. Luckily, the way that our towel rack is positioned, it's like right next to the bathtub on the left side. When you enter the bathroom, it's on the, like the, it's right next to the bathtub. So I guess my head basically kind of hit like the lower part of the towel, right?
Yeah.
And I'm probably guessing if the towel wasn't there, it definitely would have been worse, I think.
Yeah. So from my point of view, I was trying to help him clean up afterwards. We were getting ready to pull up his jock strap, and then all of a sudden I hear him make this moan. And so I look up and I stand up, and right in that second, his eyes rolled back into the back of his head, just like a cartoon. And he falls over, and I somewhat caught him from falling into the bathtub, which would have been terrible. Yeah. All of the soap knocks down off the bathtub, by the way. All of it's in the bathtub after, because his arm goes flying. And then then his head hits the wall. And he twists his foot and like completely collapses on the ground. And I thought he was dead because he didn't move for like 30 seconds. So I start calling 911 and I'm screaming and crying and trying to get him up.
Yeah.
And then 30 seconds goes by and he's still not getting up. And I'm like, oh my God, I killed him. He's dead. But then he, all of a sudden he's conscious and he's crying and screaming about his foot.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember like, because I remember being on the ground and I was trying to crawl because my right foot was, it was the worst pain I'd ever felt.
Worse than the biopsy?
I mean, it was definitely up there. I'll say like top 10 pains I've ever felt in my life. Like that, I couldn't put hardly any pressure on it. It was, I don't know, I guess I twisted it in a way when I fell that it felt like, I don't know what this, how to describe it. It was like I don't know, I guess like imagine, you know, like when you get numb, you know, you get like tingling sensation or whatever, but imagine that, but it just doesn't go away. And it's like, someone's like hammering you or something, like, you know, hammering your foot, I guess. That's how it felt. It was bad, you know? And so, yeah, like she was saying, I was out, you know, I guess I was crying and yelling and stuff like that. And I remember her, she was moving all over the place to me.
Yeah, because I was trying to get my phone and I was trying to get you to lay flat on the floor. So I got him back to the bed and our bed's on the floor, by the way, because we have a futon, like a Japanese style futon. But anyway, so I get him to lay down on the bed,
which is probably good that we have that type of bed,
because otherwise we'd have to have you lay on the floor.
Right.
So I get him to lay flat there, and I call back 911 because they're calling me back and everything, and I get the ambulance to come. And meanwhile, while I'm waiting for the ambulance to come, I opened the gauze to see, and it's back to bleeding again, probably because when he fell, like, it wasn't bleeding too bad, but it was still bleeding. So yeah, that was a huge detour for recovering after the surgery. So I guess the moral of the story is here, and we'll talk about medications and stuff later and what influence that may have had on that. But just, we would advise to not stand up for at least the first 2 days.
Yeah.
Maybe even third day if you can go. I mean, it depends on how you react to your recovery and everything, but it's just not worth the risk, especially since probably your caretaker is going to be either one of your parents, if you're going through an egg retrieval at the same time, or it's going to be your wife.
Yeah.
And chances are she's probably smaller than you and not going to be able to carry you if you fall.
Right.
So yeah, just buy a male urinal and like one of the handheld urinal buckets. Or if you don't want to get something like that, you could even just get like a container or something and have like, you know, just pee in there and then have your significant other or your caretaker take it out and wash it and stuff. But yeah, it's just easier that way because you don't have any risk of falling if you're laying down.
Yeah, so enjoy your bed, dudes.
Yep, have lots of stuff to do in your bed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty crazy time.
Yep. Another thing that you might want to have, if you get affected by anesthesia, is some sort of anti-nausea medicine that won't interact with the other medications that you're on. You didn't really have a problem with it, but I know a lot of people have a problem with anesthesia. So, because you don't want to be like, you know, super weak, can't stand up to pee, and then also be like throwing up.
Yeah.
So it's just better to be prepared for that kind of thing.
Yeah. And do you want to talk about the like the drug that I was on?
We can get into that after we get into the actual surgery, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
So the day that you go to do the surgery, they'll most likely give you socks. So you don't need to bring cozy socks unless you want to, but it's going to be super cold in that room. So usually they may let you keep your socks if you bring cozy socks, but other than that, you're going to be taking off all your clothes anyway.
Right.
During COVID, I guess if you're listening to this and we're still in COVID restrictions at that time, because I don't know when you're going to listen to this, but I guess they won't let your partner back with you, because when we did it the second time, they weren't going to let me go back and talk to the doctor at first.
Yeah.
But under normal circumstances, both of you will go back to pre-op, and they'll talk to you about what your expectation should be and what's going to happen, and, you know, like what they're going to be looking for and how this is all going to go down.
Right.
Yeah, so you want to talk about that from your point of view, or?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously, like she was saying, just you got to take all your clothes off, and they'll give you this robe, you know, or, yeah, like a, I guess a robe, whatever.
It's like a hospital gown.
Yeah, hospital gown, yeah. That's
and it. Like a shower cap.
Yeah, thing. Like a shower cap, yeah. And I don't think they had me wear a mask. I don't think they had me wear a mask. Did they? I don't
know. Yeah, they did. Oh, okay. So if you're listening to this and it's still COVID time, then you're going to be wearing a mask too, which is just ridiculous. But
yeah, whatever.
It's like, we're going to go cut into your balls, but you have to wear a mask.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, hospital gown and, you know, shower cap and all that. And then, yeah, like socks, as she was saying. And so obviously they're going to, you know, stick you with a needle and put the IV in you and all that good stuff and all that, just kind of letting you know what's gonna happen, because then you're gonna have a bunch of people coming, like, you know, all the nurses are gonna come in, and then eventually your doctor will come in,
and then kinda, the anesthesiologist,
yeah, and they'll kind of tell you what they're gonna do and, you know, all that stuff. So it's kind of just, I guess I'm probably thinking of any surgery that probably just lets you know, hey, you know, this is what we're, you know, we're gonna do, what to expect and all that stuff. And then it's funny too, because, you know, as they're wheeling you in, they're like, hey, what's going on? You're kind of talking and all that. And then they put the gas over your face. And the next thing you know, oh, I guess I'm back over at post-op now.
Yeah. It's like you lost time.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. Yeah. It's funny too, because you're thinking, oh, I'm going to know exactly when it's going to happen. But every single time it's happened for me, I'm just like, oh, I'm back at post-op already. What the hell?
Yeah. You know? It's so weird. It's not like sleeping at all.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like you just lose time.
Right.
So one thing that makes this type of surgery totally different than any other type of surgery is that your partner or your caretaker or whoever is going to be with you during the surgery is going to be waiting in the waiting room, waiting for your doctor to give them the tissue sample. So that was my job, and it was terrifying, let me tell you, because I'm like, if they give me these vials of liquid and there's sperm in there, what happens if I kill it? You know, like between going from the surgery center to my clinic, because usually they'll do the surgery in like a reproductive surgery center or something like that. Sometimes they'll do it in the same clinic. In that case, you won't have to go through this, but a lot of the times, if you're going with a urologist and they're working in, they're working together with your reproductive specialist, then you will have to take the sample yourself.
Yeah.
So I guess tips for that is keep it body temperature warm. So put it in like a shirt, like a loose shirt pocket or in your lap, something like that. Another tip is to have someone else drive you because you're going to be feeling like you're just hysterical.
In a rush.
Yeah, you're going to be feeling like you're in a rush, and then you're going to be like extremely nervous and kind of like, well, this is like going to determine the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah.
So you're not in a state to drive. So just get someone else to drive you. Either take a Lyft or have a family member or a friend drive you to your clinic. Yeah, and don't think about it too much. I know that sounds crazy, but if you think about it too much while you're transporting, you're probably going to have a panic attack.
So, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, usually with a biopsy, it will take about maybe 45 minutes to collect tissue because they're kind of just going in and taking tissue randomly. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be looking for anything in particular. But if you're waiting for a microtesy, it could take up to 2 hours.
Yeah.
So just be prepared to keep yourself occupied and not go crazy in the waiting room.
Yeah. And then, so what about the post-op stuff? Anything about that?
Yeah. So in post-op, of course, you're going to be coming back from your clinic because you take the sample. Now, if you're doing an egg retrieval, then your wife will be going through an egg retrieval right after that. So you're probably going to have a different caretaker, but whoever your caretaker is, they will need to drive you home because obviously you can't drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just got your testicles operated on. Like, that's ridiculous. I suggest bringing something to throw up in just in case you throw up on the way home.
Yeah.
If you're bad with anesthesia, or if you know that you have a history with anesthesia or something like that.
Right.
Also, if you've never taken, what do you call it? What type of drug is Tramadol and Vicodin?
Like an opioid?
Yeah, opioids.
Opioid, yeah.
If you've never taken an opioid in your life, then you probably won't have the greatest reaction to it. Just most likely, because everybody who I know who's like, they get on Vicodin or something because of their surgery, they end up having either like weird side effects or they get like addicted to it. So just like be prepared to, I mean, usually they give you like a really low dose if you've never had something like that before. But in his case, he had some pretty bad side effects, which included all that drowsiness and some crazy stuff happened after he fell down that were related to that drug.
Yeah. And some other thing that happened to me was I started getting this really bad migraine.
Well, like first you were nauseated.
Yeah.
And this was like 3 days after the surgery because they're going to keep you on whatever painkiller they have you on.
Right.
So he was on Tramadol and it was the third day and you were like getting nauseated. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell is going on. So then after that, then you started developing that headache.
Yeah. And it was, again, with the foot, this was one of, if not the worst headache, migraine, whatever I've ever had. I mean, it was bad. I could hardly sleep. I mean, I was complaining a lot. I mean,
well, we had to go back to the ER. This is the second time going back to the ER, by the way. Yeah, they had to do an MRI on his head to make sure he didn't get a concussion from falling down. Mm-hmm. But they said that it really didn't have anything to do with that. So we were like, okay, so the only other thing that it could be is the Tramadol.
Yeah. Yeah, and when kind of we thought, well, that's probably the biggest possibility, the doctor there, they basically prescribed us ibuprofen. I think like the highest dosage that you can.
Yeah, 800 milligrams.
Yeah. And so once I started taking the ibuprofen, that's actually when the headache and migraine or whatever, that's when it started going away.
Yeah. And then he started recovering because before then it seemed like it was getting worse. Mm-hmm. Like he was having nausea, low blood temperature, or what is it called? Like low body temperature, low blood sugar.
Right.
Even though we were eating healthy and eating a lot until he started feeling sick. And then with the headache thing. So we were like, okay, let's just switch now the reason why they don't normally prescribe ibuprofen for this kind of thing is because they're worried about the bleeding. Because if you take high doses of ibuprofen or even just normal dose of ibuprofen and you have an open wound or something like that, then it's more likely to bleed.
Isn't like a blood thinner, right?
Yeah. But for his microtesy, which was after the biopsy, so it was a different surgery, we did request that it was ibuprofen only, and it did bleed probably longer than the other one.
Like maybe a day or two longer.
Yeah. But it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another way to make sure that you won't bleed too much is to not take a shower for the first 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't take a shower. Definitely don't take a bath. Yeah, but don't take a shower for at least, I would say, 3 days probably. Yeah. Because our mistake in your second surgery, the microtesy, was giving you a shower on the day after the surgery.
Yeah.
And then it started bleeding more. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just take sponge baths. Have your caretaker give you a sponge bath. Don't try to clean the wound with soap or anything like that. Just dab it with water and make sure that it's extremely dry, because you don't want that to be like, you don't want that area to be wet while it's still bleeding and all that stuff.
Yeah. Another thing that we failed to mention to prepare yourself for all of this is, at least I hope, I don't think you mentioned this, but it was those little pads, those little square pads, you know, to kind of help, because obviously you're getting the gauze, whatever. At least for my case, we got pads to kind of like, you know, kind of, I guess, because you don't want the penis to kind of be anywhere near that, you know, as far away as possible. You know, you want to have some blockage there, you know, so you want to have the pad there to kind of help kind of alleviate.
Yeah, that's what I was saying with the nonstick pads.
Oh, okay.
But you did remind me of something, that another thing you need to have is something to clean yourself, or for them to like give you a sponge bath. Like you can just use soap and water in like a bucket or something and do a sponge bath that way. But they also do sell like sponge bath foam at CVS and Walmart, where you can, it basically comes out like a foam, and then you can rub it onto their skin and then wipe it off with a wet washcloth, and you know, it cleans your skin and stuff. And I think you can also use it on your hair. So it's kind of cool.
And another thing too, that I would recommend is bone broth, and to drink lots and lots of bone broth, at least three times a day, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because, you know, a lot of collagen, it'll heal things faster.
Oh yeah.
For the second one, we did that a lot, because we're kind of just jumping into it. Oh, let's go in and see what's, you know.
Yeah.
But with the second one, we were more prepared for it, so we try to drink more bone broth. But, you know, and if you're a vegan, then I guess try to find some other way to help.
Probably some type of vegan collagen. I think you can get collagen from certain like seaweeds or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But like when your caretaker is thinking of what to feed you while you're recovering, soups are probably the best bet.
Yeah.
Because you can use bone broth as a base. And also you can add collagen powder, like collagen peptides. You want collagen type, I think it's, you need at least type 1 and 3, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
It's bovine collagen. So you'll look that up, bovine collagen.
It's funny though.
And you want grass fed.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want anything other than that, or it's not going to be the same effect. So you can either, you can like make your own. You can make your own bone broth ahead of time, using either like, you know, chicken bones that you saved up, or chicken feet is like the easiest way to make bone broth. If you use chicken feet, that's a secret. It makes it very gelatinous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's where all the collagen's at. Or you can actually just buy some bone broth, but just make sure that it's grass-fed cows and everything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you really don't want to do that, like if you're really not a soup person, then you can just buy collagen peptides and add it to pretty much any liquid that you drink. But the best way to get healed quickly is to do all of that. Like take the collagen peptides, drink bone broth, eat soup, like I would say have soup for lunch and dinner, and then also drink bone broth in between there.
Yeah.
And you'll get like a lot faster recovery results.
Well, it's funny that we're talking about food. And I was going to say this, but like immediately after we went out of the surgery, or if you're driving home, whatever, the first meal that I get the first time, and so we live in Texas, so we got Whataburger. We got Whataburger after, because I'm like, okay, after
this. Were like starving.
Yeah, so I was like, I want Whataburger. And then the second time, got In-N-Out. It's just like, we get burgers, I guess, is just what I wanted every time I went out of surgery. I don't know.
Well, they don't let you eat like the night before, so you're probably like super, super hungry.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The night before, they will tell you to not eat or drink anything after a certain period of time. And then if your surgery is not in the morning, then like, you know, because like his surgery was super early in the morning both times. But then I know this is unrelated, but when I did my egg retrieval, mine was kind of in the late morning and I was starving.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we'll get into the egg retrieval in the next episode. That's the plan for that.
Yeah, so I think that pretty much covers it. Another thing that's going to be kind of weird to deal with is you're going to be trying to recover from the surgery. So you're kind of at your like basic needs. You're like, okay, I need to be able to drink, eat, and use the bathroom and fall asleep. Those are like the goals.
Yeah.
And to not bleed out too much.
Yeah. And if you're like me and you're not comfortable, or you're not used to sleeping on your back, well, get used to it, because you're gonna be sleeping on your back.
You cannot be sleeping on your stomach when you have a wound in your front part.
Yeah.
So if you do sleep on your stomach, putting a pillow on top of your on your stomach and like hugging it seems to help
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, or positioning pillows around yourself so you can't flip over is also good. But anyway, so what I was going to mention earlier is that while you're trying to take care of your basic needs, and your caretaker will be trying to help you with your basic needs, which is exhausting enough when you can't do anything, you know, you're also going to be dealing with possibly the grief of not finding the results that you wanted in your surgery, which is really hard because you're like, you know, did I do this for no reason? Or like, what was the point?
Yeah.
So, and it's really heavy, you know?
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, that we were talking about at the beginning is the expectations of it, you know, like the kind of results that obviously we're hoping everything is a success, but obviously there's that big possibility that it's not going to be a success. So you kind of have to, I mean, obviously they can say, you know, help prepare you and just know that's going to happen. Even when you know that it, you know, it failed or whatever, nothing happened, you know, it's just, it's not good, obviously, you know, so.
Yeah, and it's, and for some people who don't, who like are going through this for the first time, when you're dealing with your disappointment, it can get extremely depressing, especially when you can't move and you can't do anything and, you know, you're in pain and.
Yeah. Yeah, and just know that there's forks in the road and you can go to either one when you're going to these type of surgeries because. And like you've mentioned before, there's people who've done this multiple times, or there's people who've just do it one time. And after that, everything's good. You know, they're good to go.
Yep.
You know, and they have all the sperm they need and, you know, and the partner, you know, obviously speaking of from a male perspective, you know, the wife or the girlfriend or whatever, they have their eggs and all that stuff and
everything's good to fine. Go.
Yeah. So,
but other times, and especially with non-obstructive azoospermia, where it's a production issue or a hormone issue, you need to manage your expectations and think about, I mean, it's terrible to think about, but you need to think about before you go into surgery, what am I going to do to deal with this if this fails?
Yeah.
Like, so, I know some people will do like, okay, we're going to do this microtesy and we're going to do it at the same time as an egg retrieval and then we're going to have donor backup. I know that's like for some people that's really hard to get to that point, but some people want to do that because they don't want to have to freeze eggs if they can't find sperm.
Yeah.
But then there's also just preparing mentally, like, okay, so if this fails, or if they find something in the biopsy that changes a lot of our decisions in the future, we need to figure out how we're going to deal with it so that we're not too emotionally overwhelmed while we're also trying to recover.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, a lot of things can happen, basically. And so, obviously, you want it to work, but you just got to know that it's not 100% and it's not foolproof. So, you kind of have to know what you're getting yourself into.
Yep.
Basically.
You're basically just, you know, it's just another chance for you.
Yeah.
And I know another thing that's really hard is a lot of times these surgeries, especially microtessy, I think biopsy is covered by insurance, but microtessy is usually not covered by insurance unless you have fertility coverage. And another thing we didn't even mention, but the first time when he went through a biopsy, like a regular testicular biopsy, he also got a varicocele repair, which is common.
Right.
If you have varicocele and then you got azoospermia, then they're going to tell you to get a varicocele repair. And like 50% of the time, it will increase your chances. And then sometimes it won't help at all. Mm-hmm. In our case, it didn't help at all. But it's, I mean, I think from the way that you reacted, it seemed like the varicocele repair surgery, because of the way they do it, was worse than the biopsy.
Yeah, because at least for me, I don't know how it is for anyone else that's gone through it, but for me, they have to, basically push the testicle out, you know, and.
Well, that was to do the second, your left biopsy, but I'm talking about, so they cut like a pretty big hole, like maybe like a 2-inch, about 2 inches, maybe an inch and a half.
Yeah, inch and a half, yeah.
And it's right where your groin meets your leg, so it's like extremely uncomfortable to sit.
Yeah, that was the worst part for sure in terms of just that whole thing.
Yeah, and basically what they're doing with a varicocele surgery is they're cutting the hole there and they're tying up the veins that are going the wrong way with metal clips. So then like your recovery for that, like a lot of the times they'll do a biopsy at the same time just because, you know, you're already going under. So why would you do two separate surgeries?
Right.
It's just makes it harder to deal with. But yeah, to me, it seemed like the varicocele repair was worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for the pain and the just sensitivity. Yeah, that was probably worse than the biopsy.
I guess just to wrap this up, recovery time was about, he was in the bed probably, like I'm doing an average of both times. I would say you're in bed for about 3 or 4 days without walking.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, a week with walking and, you know, light exercise, meaning like, you know, walks or something like that.
Not trying to do too much, yeah.
You can resume sexual activity probably about a week and a half.
Yeah, we can later, have 2 weeks, yeah.
Depending on how you heal. And I would say you're probably about fully recovered about 3 weeks after.
Yeah, like, that sounds about right.
Like there's no, like the stitches have dissolved.
Yeah.
You've already had your post-op, you know, your balls are back to being the right color, because of course they're going to bruise because you just had a biopsy. So don't be, I forgot to mention that. I don't know why I forgot, but just don't be alarmed if they're completely black and blue for a couple days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a natural, you know, how it goes, whatever. But yeah, and that's just give and take with the time frame of recovery. But yeah, I would say about total 3 weeks. But again, it could be longer for some people. It could be shorter, but we'll just say expect 3 weeks of, you know, recovery time. Just say about that. A little less than a month. We'll just say that.
Yeah. And if you're worried about going back to work and stuff, if you work a very physical job, then I would really prepare for this, because you're not going to be able to like lift heavy stuff for at least 2 weeks.
Yeah. Somewhere in there. Yeah.
If you work an office job, it's not too bad because you can still sit and work. But
yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. For working in a physical job, definitely. Yeah. For sure. Take it easy. And if you're able to try and take some time off work, because you're gonna have to take some. I'm just gonna say that right now. You're gonna have to take some work time off work.
Yeah, because like one thing I just wanted to mention was like on those recovery sheets or like post-op instructions, they're like, oh yeah, you'll be good after 1 week. Yeah, you'll be fine after a couple days. Yeah, I don't know about that. Like,
Maybe if we drink a whole jar of bone broth, maybe. Like, we just drink all of it in one day.
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't. Because, well, first of all, they make you wear the jock strap for at least 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why they, you know, it, I don't know. At least take off 2 weeks if you're doing this surgery, yeah. Because it is going to take a toll on your health. And you need to give yourself enough time to heal from it.
Yep. All right. Anything else that you want to mention?
Shouldn't I be asking you that? Because you're the one who had the surgery.
Well, I mean, I can't really think of anything else other than, you know, the surgery.
Well, what would you want to say to someone who's going through this for the first time?
Well, we kind of mentioned it before, but, you know, obviously, I guess to kind of summarize everything, just have, I guess, middle of the road expectations of the success rate. You know, don't think you're going to go into this and it's going to be 100%. Like, okay, everything after this is going to be perfect. That's not always the case, especially for me. It wasn't the case for me. It may not be the case for you, but I do hope that it works out for you. I really hope, you know, if you're listening to this, you're about to go through this. I really hope it works out. Secondly, be as prepared as possible. You know, get all the supplies that you need. You know, you can hear us talk about what we used for my recovery. Maybe there's some other people out there who did some other things, and maybe you can kind of listen to what they have to say, and maybe just combine everything. But anyways, just try and get as prepared as possible with the supplies that you can get from various stores and all that. And the third is, you know, expect to be in bed for the first week and just try not to push yourself after recovery, because that was our mistake. It's not that was my mistake, because I was kind of, you know, I guess a little,
ambitious?
Word? Yeah, I was too ambitious. You know, I wanted to, you know, I'm good. I can walk. I'm fine. Just don't push too hard, basically, the first week for sure, especially the first week. Because you don't want to hopefully get into my situation where, you know, you faint and your foot hurts for a long time. Because even after I was recovered from my surgery and all that, my foot still hurt for, I would say, like, 2-3 months, maybe. It was a while, you know, so please do not get in that situation. Please don't do that.
Yeah. Don't get out of bed for the first 2 days or 3 days at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, you know, obviously your doctor and all the people that they work with, they'll be in contact with you to kind of see what's going on with you. And if you have any questions for them, please let them know what they are and anything like that, because if there's anything that we haven't mentioned, you know, and something's going on with you that's out of the ordinary, definitely let them know.
Yeah, the doctor is on call for a reason. So, like, afterwards, yeah, when they give you the on-call number, use it. Because the first time we had all those problems with you fainting and then having other issues, we were constantly calling them, but it kept them in the loop, and then we were able to make decisions better.
Yeah, and they're going to schedule after surgery appointment and all that stuff, and the doctor will examine and see how everything is going with your recovery. So, you know, your doctor's still going to be a part of the recovery as well. So definitely don't be alarmed about that. So in terms of that, I don't think I have anything else that I'd like to add.
Yeah. And I just thought of one other thing. You may wonder, like, when am I going to get results about what happened? Well, the embryologist will probably let you know a couple hours after the surgery. So they will call you.
Yeah. And then again, that's part of it. That's part of the expectations. I mean, obviously, when you're after it, you're like, oh my gosh, I hope everything works. But just do your best to try and expect all possibilities, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah,
and I hope you make it through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And hopefully this helped try to help you better prepare yourself for these type of things. And for the next episode, we're going to be talking about the egg retrieval. So we're going to be talking about the ladies and, you know, how they have to go through their stuff.
Yeah, and there's a lot more information on egg retrievals, but I just kind of wanted to talk about my experience.
Yeah.
Especially since I have to go through it again.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So
I guess that's a good way to end it, right?
Yeah. So again, thank you so much for listening. And if you just, you know, if you want to reach out to us, don't hesitate. We have our Instagram and our email down in the show description. You can, you know, contact us anytime.
Ask us any questions about your microtissy or something like that.
Yeah.
Anything related to infertility. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do our best to, you know, help you through it, I guess, right? All right. Well, that's it. And we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.